This show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles. And everyone listening all over the world via the internet on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy. I'm a lawyer, and I do this show called Gervy's Law. I'm actually the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. And every week, I am here to be the managing partner of your life. What a life it is. This week has been an exciting week. Not only at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, and by the way, you can go visit us at www.rgwlawfirm.com. If you want to know a little bit about workers' compensation law, employment law, labor law, social security law, a few other things, some excitement over there at the rgwlawfirm.com website. And you can also go to our Facebook page for Gervy's Law. If you're on Facebook, and I know you are, check out Gervy's Law and like us. So what was I doing this week? Well, I was involved in a lot of trials, and I'm going to tell you about one trial because it dovetails nicely with our show today. I learned, as I've always known as a lawyer, that things aren't always as they appear. That's a premise in law and life, and I want to tell you a little bit about a trial that I had this week. And then I'm going to talk about our show, which is a very, very interesting show. You don't want to miss it because I think it involves everyone. It'll hit some chords with you as it will with your friends and family. So don't miss what we're going to talk about. But let me tell you about my trial. So there I was representing one of my injured workers, a poor, unfortunate woman who had done everything she could to establish herself in a really great job for her. She had worked 15 years at a company that made candles for churches, for Catholic churches. They made candles, and she had done a really great job of supporting her family by working at this job. She had a limited educational background from a different country, didn't speak the language well, but she worked really hard for 15 years to help support her family. And then on one fateful day, unfortunately, her hand got caught in a machine, and the machine basically ate up her hand. It was horrifying. She lost a finger and had a very, very, very painful pain syndrome as a result of this unfortunate accident, which didn't allow her to use her hand very well at all after that, and she hasn't worked since, been in a lot of pain and emotional distress. So what happens? She goes on trial. The judge listens to her story. She was very tearful as she explained how her hand was caught in the machine and she was horrified and she couldn't get it out and it was a mess. And then the nightmares that she experienced afterwards. And she talked about her limited education, not having the ability to transfer into other jobs like some of us fortunately do have. And then she was cross-examined about a bunch of activities that she allegedly did. And at the end of the cross-examination, when the case was about to be submitted to the judge for decision, the defense attorney representing the insurance company says, "Hold on, Your Honor, we have a special motion. We want to bring in private investigators to prove that she's a liar." And of course, being the advocate that I am, I stood up just like Al Pacino in Justice for All and said, "You're out of order. This is not justice." I was screaming all over the place saying, "This is unfair. This is ambush." And the judge said, no, I want to hear what the private investigators have to say. So we took a break, and the private investigator walked in, put up this huge screen. I've never seen a screen so big. We always see these little monitors from computers, but this was a big projection screen like you've never seen, like I saw when I was 5 years old at school when I used to go to Montrose School back in Canada, and we used to watch black and white films. So he set up the screen, and then three investigators came in. I was a little bit concerned, although I did believe in my client, but I was a little bit concerned. You never know, because things aren't always as they appear. I thought she was legit. I thought she was credible. I thought she did an incredible job of testifying at her trial. Then, in a dramatic moment in the courtroom, everything stopped, and the other attorney said to the judge, "We are withdrawing our motion to show the video of this injured worker." And the judge said, Why? You stopped the court. I was about to take this matter under submission. You brought in this dog and pony show to show videos of this injured worker, and now you're withdrawing it? And he put his head down in a moment of embarrassment and shame. The defense attorney for the insurance company said, "The woman in the videos is not the same woman that is sitting on the witness stand today." I sighed a little bit of relief. My client just stared at me like I haven't done nothing wrong. They packed up their gear. The three investigators left the courtroom, and the case was submitted. So, folks, what we learn is in law and life, things aren't always as they appear. Today, we're going to talk about our political situation and the media, the freedom of the press, so to speak. We're going to talk about what has been going on in this election, all about what the media has said, mostly about Donald Trump, but also about Hillary Clinton, how skewed our journalists are. Why are they skewed? If you were like me, you grew up in an era where we respected journalism. We thought it was unbiased. We thought that it was objective. But apparently that's not the case. In fact, what we are learning in this election is that the media is really controlling a lot of people's thoughts, as well as, of course, those Facebook friends on our Facebook feeds who have been so outspoken. By the way, I've had enough, as I'm sure a lot of you have. Please stop posting political statements about ad hominems about Trump or Clinton. It's enough already. I don't know why you're so angry. People, why are you so angry? Why? Give me a break. It is what it is. This country is in the situation it is because of all of you, no one else. Don't blame other people. People are not perfect. Both of these candidates obviously should not be the president of this country, of this great country. Neither of them should be. One of them will be, probably Hillary Clinton, and we'll have to deal with it. But as a lawyer, I like to look at the law. How often can you get away by just trashing people, just saying ad hominems about people? I guess maybe it's true, but how does that affect the voters, and how does that affect this election? We're going to find out. We're going to talk about the media today. We're going to talk about how the media has shaped the thought of the American public. We have with us coming up after the break, Eugene Volokh. Eugene Volokh is the professor, I like to call him, of First Amendment Law at UCLA School of Law, and he writes a blog called The Volokh Conspiracy. He talks a lot about First Amendment rights, media law, and other interesting topics that lawyers and non-lawyers alike find fascinating. Later in the show, we'll have Jens Kepke on. Yes, Jens Kepke is the founding partner of Shaw, Kepke, and Satter. And he has taught media law and ethics, and he also deals with the media. He also deals with freedom of the press. We are going to learn a little bit about what we are experiencing firsthand in law and life and how it will shape our future. You don't want to miss it. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. We will be right back.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW Lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW Lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervie and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Hey everyone, Proactive has a special offer for our listeners. Stay tuned for a 100% risk-free offer that includes a free giveaway and free shipping. You have acne or even the occasional breakout? With prescription-grade Proactive, your acne can heal and you can prevent future breakouts. Want to try Proactive? They're letting everyone try Proactive 100% risk-free. Plus, they're giving away a free deep cleansing face brush and free shipping when you call right now, 800-747-4043. You heard right, a risk-free trial of Proactive, a free deep cleansing brush, and free shipping. Take it from me, Proactive really works. So here's the deal again for our listeners. For $19.95, you'll get prescription-grade Proactive, plus a rotating deep cleansing brush valued at $45, totally free, and free shipping. You're guaranteed to get clear and stay clear, or you get your money back. Call now, 800-747-4043. That's 800-747-4043. One more time, you ready? 800-747-4043.
The King's 50th season is underway.
Heading Jet Royale, Convoy Flood, and Frenching the Muse for the Kings.
And the only way to celebrate a golden anniversary is by raising a silver cup.
Score! Kings win the game!
Tonight, the Kings open up a three-game homestand against the Vancouver Canucks. Coverage gets underway at 6:30 with Inside Kings Hockey.
Kings Hockey.
Kings Canucks, tonight at 6:30 on your home for the 50th season of LA Kings Hockey.
Go, Kings, go!
790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yes, we are back. I'm Alan Gervie. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC. And we are talking about the media today. We're talking about First Amendment expression. We're talking about bias in the media and what we are seeing in this election and whether or not we can trust what we read and what we see and what we hear in the media, specifically as it relates to the candidates, because both of them are taking a beating, possibly for good reason, but... You know, when I was growing up, I always thought that the media should be respected. I always thought that I was going to learn about what is right and what is true with a capital T. But apparently, maybe that isn't the case anymore. And I don't know if it's simply because there's so many media sources, way more than when I was young. And there's so many opportunities for misinformation to get out there. And there's so many political viewpoints that have permeated the journalism of today. We're going to talk a lot more about this as we welcome now to Gervie's Law, UCLA law professor Eugene Volokh, who is an authority in this area. He wrote the textbook, The First Amendment and Related Statutes, and is the founder and co-author of The Volokh Conspiracy, a wonderful legal conspiracy, a wonderful blog, a legal blog carried by The Washington Post. We have had Professor Volokh on our show before, and we appreciate him being with us today. Professor Volokh, welcome back to Gervie's
Law.
Always
a great pleasure.
Well, it's great to have you, and, you know, your expertise is really in the limelight now with this election. And this past week, we saw and heard the final presidential debate, and there's a lot of issues that have come up regarding the freedom of the press and whether or not specifically Donald Trump is being really trashed in the media, and there's bias against him, which is affecting the voters. How do you see this from a legal perspective as a legal scholar?
Well, there may very well be bias in the media. My sense is that there's bias in the media, but I'm not a scholar of media bias. I will tell you, as a First Amendment matter, the media is perfectly free to be biased. In fact, the media around the time of the framing was mostly political newspapers with pretty clear points of view. Starting with the late 1800s and into the 1900s, there was the sense that part of the media, generally daily newspapers, were supposed to be relatively objective in covering the news, as opposed to magazines, many of which remained magazines of opinion. But certainly the First Amendment protects people's rights to express biased views as well as trying to express objective views.
Professor Volokh, though, isn't it true that the public expects some sort of objectivity when they tune in to the news, whether it be on Fox or CNN? And maybe it isn't true, but what you're talking about historically is perhaps separating what are well-known opinion-type magazines or newspapers versus trying to learn and be educated of the issues and the news as facts.
Well, as I said, the early republic, newspapers really were highly opinionated. They were partisan organs. Then there was, for some time, a sense, and there still is a sense today, that indeed the newspapers should be as objective as possible, recognizing that human beings are never completely
right.
objective.
Right.
That's, I think, a good argument about media ethics. I do think that the media should cover the news in a balanced way, and they should treat the parties equally when it comes to figuring out what merits criticism and what doesn't. But again, as a First Amendment matter, they're perfectly free to be to try to be objective, and they're perfectly free to try to be partisan.
What I want to ask you
that is a constraint really of the market, of when people will say, no, we just don't trust you anymore.
Right. But shouldn't we be separated? Because what you're talking about, I believe, is common sense. It's theoretical. No one is saying that the media, in this country anyway, should be directed by the government or should be limited in certain ways. As long as it's lawful, we would expect that there, of course, there is freedom of the press. But the question is, are people being duped by thinking that there's objectivity when what you're saying is historically the media, given the fact that they have the license to do it, is really managing your thoughts and opinions by presenting selective ideas, opinions, and facts?
Well, my guess is that very few people really believe that the media are going to be 100% objective or even 90% objective. I think they recognize that the media is populated by human beings. And some human beings may strive for objectivity, although it's hard for them to achieve it. Some human beings don't even strive for it that much. I do think that that people assume that the media aren't going to just outright lie to them. They're going to assume that there's going to be some efforts to kind of think of the arguments on both sides. But naturally, the media are going to use their editorial judgment to decide what's a strong argument, what's a weak argument, what is worth covering, what is not worth covering, what's an important issue, what's an unimportant issue. And all of those judgments are going to be necessarily influenced by the editors and the writers' ideology. And I think the public understands that. I think the public recognizes what the media have to say should be taken with a grain of salt, especially when the question isn't just whether they're telling the truth, but rather whether they're presenting things in a slanted way or perhaps in an incomplete way. Yeah, naturally that's going to happen.
But I don't know if you can say that with a straight face regarding all of the voters in this country. You are in an environment of a wonderful university, of course, fine school, and you, on an ongoing basis, have students who are questioning, who are understanding the concepts that you're talking about, which are, I think, of course, correct. But there are so many people who are not really in tune with what they should be believing, what they shouldn't. And the way the media shapes an issue or describes a candidate or reports on some issue, people will just believe it. And these are not the questioners and, you know, the inquisitive types that you teach.
Well, look, if there are people who just trust what the media have to say, well, then there they are. They're going to be at least in considerable measure mistaken in their trust. I did just pull up though Gallup poll. This is from 2013.
Yeah.
I don't know how much has changed, there was a question asked in 2013. In general, how much trust and confidence do you have in the mass media, such as newspaper, TV, and radio, when it comes to reporting the news fully, accurately, and fairly? 22% said none at all. 33% said not very much.
Yeah.
33% said fair amount. 11% said a great deal. So according to people's own descriptions, which of course may themselves be mistaken or misleading or wishful thinking, but only 1 in 9 people say they have a great deal of trust in the mass media, and less than half say that they have a great deal or a fair amount, and more than half say not very much or none at all. So I don't think that the problem is that people are sort of expecting the media to be objective and they're being duped. I do think that often people don't know a lot about the subject,
right.
Understandably.
Exactly.
They listen to the media, and that's their only source. So even though they realize that the media might be biased, they don't take the time to try to find other sources of information.
And that's exactly the point, because we can talk about concepts, and you know, the study that you have mentioned is obviously interesting. It's probably pretty accurate, if accuracy is a relevant term. But the fact of the matter is that even people like me, when we hear things that are selectively put out in the media, we don't know whether to believe it or not, whether it's something that's true or it isn't, notwithstanding the general principle that we don't believe that everything in the media is true. So, for example, when we talk about Donald Trump and we talk about allegations of, you know, sexual harassment by women, people hear that and they divorce the concept of thinking whether or not the media is accurate or not, and they just believe it because it's put out there.
I don't think that people just believe it because it's put out there. I think they believe it for a couple of reasons. One is it seems consistent with what they have heard of Donald Trump's character. And by the way, I should say, I'm a Republican. I'm not a Donald Trump supporter, though. But the second, you know, if one person comes forward and makes an accusation, I think people can be quite skeptical. But when several people come forward and make an accusation, I think people's views, you know, one of them may be lying, one of them may be blown out of proportion,
right.
But you put it all together and coupled with what we know of this person's character, that makes it pretty plausible. That's incidentally what I think happened with Bill Cosby. That it's one thing to say, and as I often do say, look, one person is accusing someone of something, you know, maybe they're telling the truth, maybe they're not. But when a whole bunch of people accuse them, then you think, well, it's not maybe proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not like there's been a criminal trial. But boy, that's something that seems pretty telling.
Yeah, and I think that's true, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're getting to the truth of the matter, especially when we talk about Donald Trump. If we can separate some allegations of bad behavior versus allegations against Hillary Clinton of perhaps illegal behavior, why aren't more people focusing on, and why isn't the media focusing on what potentially may be illegal actions, whether it be with the foundation, the emails, or any other of her activities in the past?
Well, so that's a good question, and I wish the media did focus more on that. But note how we're shifting away from objectivity and more towards a question of what we think is sound news judgment. the media has covered the Clinton email scandals in some measure. You're saying, and I think you may be right, it would be better if they were covering that and other things more, and maybe if they were covering the Trump allegations less.
Well, I'm not. Wait a second. That's not.
That's going to be a judgment call. That you can't just say, "Well, the media ought to be objective." Well, even objective media have to make judgment calls about these kinds of questions.
It
just sounds like we don't agree with it.
I'm not necessarily saying that. I that may be true, but it's not about more or less. Maybe it's about what's more important or less important. And the fact is that with people jumping on all of the allegations against Donald Trump's character. Mm-hmm. Perhaps rightly, mm-hmm. Why isn't that being pushed aside, at least when we talk about issues that may be illegal? We put people in prison for crimes. We don't put people in prison for being an idiot.
Well, in fact, some of what has been alleged about Trump might be a crime of a battery or something along those lines. But in any event, you're asking why isn't it being put kind of pushed aside? Well, you know, there are people in the media who are talking about other things. There are people in the media who are talking about this. Again, just saying, well, you know, I think the media should be more focused on subject A than subject B, that's, again, not really so much a matter of objectivity in this instance, so much as a matter of what we think is most significant. Some people, for example, think that Clinton's, and obviously the FBI director thought, that Clinton's behavior with regard to the email servers was negligent, but not that bad. I actually do think it's pretty bad. I do think it reflects on her prospective qualities as commander-in-chief, just as allegations about Trump reflect on his prospective qualities as commander-in-chief.
But, of course, we all know that there's more that goes into a decision to indict in that situation than simply whether someone committed a crime or whether it's serious or not, because we have these political implications that are part of the press, that are part of the media, and part of the FBI. In fact, you wrote a recent blog in your blog, The Volokh Conspiracy, saying the freedom of the press doesn't give the media any special privileges, but it's also not a redundancy. What did you mean by that?
Well, so now we're shifting, fortunately, to a question that I know a good deal about, which has to do with constitutional law rather than just what the media should be doing. And that question is, does the freedom of the press give special protection to the press as an industry, as a line of business? Or does freedom of the press mean essentially freedom to use printing presses, to use mass communication technology, and, of course, the technological heirs of the printing press? Printing press just happens to be what the framers knew by way of mass communications
right.
technology. And I wrote an article several years ago, and I did a lot of research for it, starting with around the time of the framing, onto the early republic, through the 1800s and 1900s to the present. And the overwhelming evidence is that freedom of the press doesn't mean free special rights for the media. What it means is everybody's right to use mass communications technology. Now, as it happens, the press in the sense of an industry especially takes advantage of the press in the sense of the printing press, the technology, especially back before the Internet. And even today, the press as an industry disproportionately uses the Internet compared to any particular individual. But the rights secured by the First Amendment are equal for everybody, with no special rights for the New York Times or CNN or some other such publication.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, although it doesn't really address what we were talking about before, which is, of course, the political perspectives that are injected into, quote, the freedom of the press. We have to take a quick break. We'll be back with Professor Volokh right after this. You're listening to Gervais Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Have you or someone you know been injured on the job? Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers understand that physical and emotional workplace injuries severely impact your life. You have rights when injured at work, but you need an advocate to avoid getting lost in the red tape of a broken system. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers fully understand the complex workers' compensation system and will protect your rights if you've been injured on the job. RGW lawyers won't give up when the insurance company fails you, and they have years of experience with catastrophic injuries like brain injuries, strokes, chemical exposure, cancers, and death. RGW lawyers are compassionate and aggressive with over 40 years of advocacy for the rights of injured workers and have helped people change their lives with some of the largest settlements in California. You need someone in your corner if you're suffering from a work-related injury. Rowan Gervey and Wynn Lawyers will fight to get you the medical treatment you need. A workplace injury can happen at any time. Put this number in your phone now. 855-4-RGW-LAW. 855-4-RGW-LAW or go to rgwlawfirm.com.
Your music can take you anywhere you want to go. And Guitar Center is the best place to start the journey. Save up to 25% on over 200,000 guitars, amps, and accessories from major brands. Get an Epiphone Limited Edition Les Paul for just $399, an Ibanez Electric for $249, a Yamaha Dreadnought Acoustic Electric for $199, or D'Addario Strings 3-packs for $10. Where will your new guitar take you? Guitarathon is going on now at Guitar Center.
Not available in all states.
Whoa, what do you have there?
It's a Reese and Irvy's frozen yogurt. We just had our robot make one.
A robot made your frozen yogurt?
Yes, the world's first fully interactive robot vending machine that serves 9 flavors of delicious yogurt with 6 amazing toppings. And it's available for an exclusive franchise opportunity.
How do I get my own Reese and Irvy's robots?
It's easy, but you better act now. Locations and machines are going fast. Just go to froyofranchising.com and enter promo code 3636. That's froyofranchising.com, promo code 3636.
Good morning.
McIntyre in the moon
with Terry Ray Elmer.
A 350-pound Florida man ran from a Walmart with 2 stolen TVs in his pants.
Those are some big pants.
He was caught, by the way. He had a crack pipe. And where was the crack pipe found? That's right, up the butt. You know, again, when you talk about a tough job the police have, who gets the gig of getting the crack pipe out of the guy's butt?
McIntyre in the morning
with Terry Ray Elmer. Mornings at 5 on 790 KABC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gervey and Carrie Kasem now at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Yeah, we're back right here on Gervey's Law on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We're speaking with UCLA law professor Eugene Volokh, who also is the founder of the Volokh Conspiracy, a blog that's published by the Washington Post. I'm reading all these text messages that people are sending me, and I just received one, Professor Volokh, that says, the Watchdog Center for Public Integrity on Monday, this past Monday, said that journalists favored Clinton 27-1 over Trump. I'm not sure what that means. It says some 430 in the media business donated to Clinton compared to 50 to Trump. As a Republican, how does that make you feel?
Well, I will say I do think there is media bias in favor of Democrats. It certainly doesn't surprise me that the journalists wouldn't want to donate to Trump, given all of the things that Trump has said about journalists. So that probably somewhat overstates the magnitude of the bias. And again, even many Republicans like me don't like Trump. I haven't donated to him. But yes, I do think that there is bias in favor of Democrats. I do think that there are stories which would get more airplay when they had the parties been reversed, or in other stories they would get less airplay if the parties had been reversed because of this media bias. That's unfortunately the reality. This is human nature. Some people don't even try to rein in their bias. They just say, oh, you know, yeah, I don't like this candidate. I'm going to run big with this story because I don't like him. Others try hard to be objective, but it's very hard to be objective just as a normal human being, because you're the things that look that look to you like they're genuinely, objectively more important are going to be colored by your perspective on the issues and your perspective on who's good and who's bad.
But is that the job?
So, yeah, I think this is a serious issue, and I think that voters need to pay attention. I will also say I'm surprised that more conservatives, especially more wealthy conservatives, aren't buying newspapers and running them as serious news organs, but at the same time ones that are fighting against the liberal media bias.
Well, there was also a poll done by Quinnipiac University that stated that almost 9 of 10 Republicans said the news organization are biased against Trump, while 3 in 4 Democrats disagree with that notion. 55% of likely voters surveyed said the media are biased against the Republican presidential nominee, while only 42% said there is no media bias against the real estate mogul. So this seems to be directed at your point, which is people do realize that there is bias, and they do realize that perhaps Donald Trump is the one who the media is biased against. How that will impact a voter is just another issue.
Sure. And again, also one needs to then ask to what extent the criticism of Trump reflects bias and to what extent it reflects the genuine weaknesses of the candidate. It's often very hard to tease that apart, that it may be that the media are focusing on the outrageous things he says and the outrageous things he's alleged to have done, because he does say a lot of outrageous things.
But how do you reconcile the beliefs, the objectives, the thoughts, the opinions, for instance, of a Republican-type person who believes in the ideals or the principles or the politics of Republicanism versus voting for Hillary Clinton? Why are Republicans voting on where there are issues, or if they're saying they're going to vote for Hillary Clinton, when that goes against their perspective and viewpoints on the issues?
Well, maybe because they wouldn't trust Donald Trump's finger on the nuclear button. He seems like a loose cannon. He seems like a person who talks a lot about how he's been personally insulted. He doesn't like people who've personally insulted him. Maybe that's the kind of person you think that isn't trustworthy.
But do you
now,
really?
I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton because I just very much dislike her too.
Right.
And
so why don't
I'm
you vote
for Gary Johnson? I think. But the bottom line is, it's certain. I have friends who are very serious conservatives who say, look, at this point, it's just a matter of who's less likely to get us into a nuclear war, and that's probably Hillary Clinton.
But do you really believe that? When you think about who Donald Trump is, isn't there just a lot of bravado and stupidity and not a lot of substance? I mean, you come from a country or from an area which I'm sure over your lifetime you saw real dictatorship or tyranny,
yeah,
or problems that became tangible. Can you really compare the Soviet Union or Russia to what Donald Trump pretends to be?
I'm sorry. I certainly wouldn't. I don't think I did. I don't think that that Trump wants to become Stalin or Brezhnev or for that matter, Putin, even though I am surprised by some of the nice things he said about Putin. But I think he is someone who it doesn't seem to have the thoughtfulness, it doesn't seem to have kind of the level temper that I think is necessary to somebody to be a commander-in-chief of armed forces, including nuclear armed forces.
And that's
now,
the
there are lots of other things that are going on as well. I certainly would very much prefer his Supreme Court nominees, for example.
Right,
Hillary Clinton.
Exactly.
I prefer his view on guns. On the other hand, when it comes to international trade, I'm very much against protectionism, and maybe Hillary Clinton is actually better on that. Hard to tell. So again, I'm not voting for Hillary Clinton, but I can certainly understand why some people say Trump is such a weak candidate, and not just a weak candidate. Trump is so dangerous potentially as a president that I'd rather go with somebody who is basically ideologically a bad person, but at least somebody who's fundamentally sensible about things.
So then you can't, within yourself, get yourself to mark a vote for Hillary Clinton, but you will accept her as the next president of the United States.
Well, I'll accept her.
Because you have no choice.
You know, if she gets elected, it's not for me to reject her or accept her, right?
Right.
I will say, by the way, there is an argument based on what you were saying earlier, that Trump is less dangerous than Clinton, which is that if Trump is president, everybody will be watching him. Everybody
right.
will be second-guessing him. Everybody will be ready to blow the whistle on him.
Yes.
Whereas with Hillary Clinton being president, many in the media and in political establishment are going to be very complacent and are going to go along with what she says. So, again, that's a perfectly plausible position on the other side.
And
it's
think
just too bad that my fellow Republicans have put us in this situation. If they had nominated somebody serious
right.
As a candidate, I think that person would be way ahead of Hillary Clinton and would be somebody I'd be enthusiastic about voting for, and many others would be enthusiastic about
that makes
for.
A lot of sense, and maybe that's a reason to vote for Donald Trump, at least what your former argument was, which is, hey, if he's got people around him, maybe the Republicans will step up. Maybe he won't be that interested in running the country, and the people around him will, and perhaps that will bode better for the country
right.
than what
is. But just think about what a horrible position this is for Republicans to be in. Well, let's vote for the guy hoping that he's not going to be really interested in the job.
Right. And if he doesn't accept the results, like, who cares, right?
Well, if he doesn't, so... one of the problems with asking will you accept the results is it's so unclear. If the question is will you commit to not asking for a recount, will you commit to not filing a lawsuit? Well, look, if Al Gore was able to do that, I don't see why Donald Trump shouldn't be able to do that. And so I don't think anybody could rightly demand that you accept what is announced by the news networks or as the tentative results on election night or the following morning. On the other hand, I certainly hope that once the legal and political process goes through, he's going to accept it. If not, I mean, I don't know what he would end up doing, but
right.
obviously there are some ways of rejecting that are crimes
they're
rightly should be punished.
I don't think so. I think that it's all smoke and mirrors, the usual Donald Trump bravado. So I wouldn't worry about it, Professor Volokh. I think the election results will stand.
Yeah, I'm not terribly worried about that.
Thank you, thank you. So we have.
When you're talking about the usual bravado, I would be worried about that if he were actually in the Oval Office.
Well, okay. I'm not sure you're right, but you may be. I want to thank you, Professor Volokh. As usual, it's intriguing and interesting having you. It's the Volokh Conspiracy, that's a wonderful blog by the Washington Post. It's Eugene Volokh, UCLA law professor. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, very much my pleasure. All the best.
And good luck with the election and the aftermath. We'll talk to you
yep.
afterward, I'm sure.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care. You're listening to Gervais Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
It's Peter Tilden for Onyx Lending. Here's the phone number, 1-800-LEND-510. You're going to want to use that phone number to get a 3.25% fixed rate conventional loan for 30 years at an APR of 3.38%. That's a 3.25% rate locked in for 30 years. That's 1-800-LEND-510. You know what else Onyx does? When you call, you don't get a salesperson. You get a senior loan officer who gives you their cell phone number. So the entire course of getting the loan, you can have all your questions answered. And that loan is not 90 days like a big bank loan. Onyx closes on the average of 30 days. They can also offer you an FHA or VA streamline loan, a loan that lowers your existing loan without appraisal, income, or credit. 1-800-LEND-510 gets you Onyx and gets you a 3.25% fixed rate conventional loan with an APR of 3.38. Call or go to their site, onyxlending.com. Lock it in now. That's 1-800-LEND-510.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. License number 415-0085, NMLS ID number 984-85, Equal Housing Lender.
790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervais Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yep. You are listening to Gervais Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. We're listening to some tunes as we talk about the media and we talk about bias in the media. We had a nice segment with Professor Volokh on Eugene Volokh, the Republican who doesn't have a candidate to vote for, according to him. We want to welcome to Gervais Law right now Jens Kepke. Jens Kepke is a founding partner of the law firm of Shaw, Kepke, and Satter, and he has taught media law and ethics for many years at Cal State Northridge. Jens, welcome to Gervais Law.
Alan, thanks so much for having me. Looking forward to it.
It's great to have you. I have to ask you right out of the box here, what are you teaching these journalists when you teach your courses? They seem to be coming out, and now we're seeing some political advocates, some partisan politics. Isn't journalism supposed to be objective?
Well, I think we, you have two things going on, Alan. I think you've got market forces and changes in the media that are happening independent of what these students are being taught. And then you have what we teach them. So as journalism education goes, it still sticks by the tried and true, you know, standard of care, as you might call it, for
right.
journalists, that we they're objective, they are finding all the facts in an unbiased fashion and presenting it to the public. But when they get out in the real world, the media environment is changing, and many of them may be employed by organizations that have journalistic organizations that may have a very particular bent.
Right. And are they using that platform to promote that bent? When we look at fact checks, for instance, we're always seeing after the debates, oh, here's the fact checks. But isn't that also selectively choosing whatever source a journalist wants to use to make a point?
Well, one of the challenges that I talk to my students about in this new world is that finding sources, credible sources, is so much more difficult than it used to be,
right?
When you and I were growing up,
exactly.
If you wanted a credible source, you went to the Encyclopedia Britannica or
the World
New
Book
York Times
Encyclopedia.
Microfiche.
Yep.
And then you got yourself a source that was fairly universally credible.
Right.
Now, what do folks do, even journalists, young journalists, they'll Google something and they'll get some kind of HTML website that says something.
And that no one's ever heard of. It's amazing when I look, a lot of times I'll look on my Facebook feed and I look at what people are posting and I look at the source and I go, who are these people and what are they all about?
And that's right. And I even caution them that nowadays the interviews that journalists do, especially young journalists who grow up in this environment, often are just electronic interviews. They're emailing someone,
right?
About the issue that they are talking about. But I say, how do you know who you're interviewing in that situation? I mean, how do you know? How do you assess credibility? How do you even assess authenticity when you've never seen or met
exactly
that person? So, these are challenges that we do talk about in school, but again, they're caught in between the reality of needing to get a job done and learning that this is the way they ought to do it, and then having employers that may have strong predilections in one direction
right.
or the other, and that's more of a societal change, right? It's, for example, I tell them in Europe, there's in many countries a more long history of having clear political leanings for newspapers. In France there are three major national newspapers, but everybody knows one of them is a more socialist left-leaning paper, one's a more conservative one, and one's a more moderate one. Well, but that's been so longly established that people can choose it. Here we're kind of almost going that direction, but it's still kind of shrouded.
Well, the interesting thing is that as lawyers, and I often think of it, and I'm sure you do too, we have ethical obligations, and we have to conduct ourselves in ethical ways, or we'll have problems with the state bar. When we're choosing evidence to present to a court, for instance, we can't selectively suppress evidence, and there's certain things we can't lie about. But in the media world, and this is interesting for you, Jens, because you are dealing both as a lawyer and you're upholding these standards of ethics, and then how do you teach journalists to be ethical when they have such an opportunity to be unethical?
Well, that's a great question, Alan, because my course is actually media law and ethics, and It used to be that in our department and others that we tried to kind of slip in ethics by osmosis in various courses, you know, hopefully every professor would bring it up in some fashion. And we decided,
Hopefully. Yeah.
We decided, no, let's dedicate one course to really teaching it head on, at least at some level. And I've taken that a step further, and I teach them even some basic philosophy of ethics, you know, the teleological reasoning and the golden mean approach. And then I give them a formula, it's pretty widely accepted ethical analysis formula called the SAD formula.
Yeah.
That's kind of an applied ethics that says if you face an ethical conundrum in your lifetime, in your professional lifetime, here's a tool that you can use to try to make the best possible decision. Because what I say to them is, in today's world, the way the courts have construed First Amendment protections for journalists, in many cases, journalists have wide latitude as to what they can do legally, right? What protections they get under the First Amendment. So often the question is not, can you do X? It's, should you do X?
Right.
And so we spend quite a bit of time and using hypotheticals exploring how to reach the best should decision. And I acknowledge the fact that the reason it's important to them is that the decision-making time frame for news organizations, as you know, is shorter than it used to be, right?
Yeah.
It's a 24-hour news cycle.
Almost instantaneous.
And if you have a fast-moving campaign like
yeah.
the one we're in. So if you're just doing a knee-jerk reaction, you know, as to what you think is the right decision, I'd say your batting percentage is maybe 50-50.
Yeah.
Maybe
no,
you're
right.
A lot of time in
you know, we'll, Jens, we only have a couple minutes, but I want to hit on something that you just said. So we're talking about the campaign, and these are it's incredible, you know, the protocol and the model that you're talking about. That's theoretical. Tell us your perspective and from your expertise as to what we're experiencing now based on the model that you've just described.
Well, I think it's a mixed bag. I mean, I do think many mainstream media organizations show admirable restraint in certain situations and try to stick to the facts.
Right.
But we do have, unfortunately, you know, on the edges, we do have less mainstream and organizations that will even pay for information, et cetera, that will push the envelope. And then once something is public, then it puts mainstream media organizations in a real bind because it's out there.
Yeah.
And you can't ignore it, particularly if it involves, you know, this campaign or any other, you know, public figure. And then you're in a bind. So I think that there has been, to some degree, a slippery slope. But I do believe that most of the mainstream organizations still try to show restraint when it comes to, you know, the classic things that we don't want to have revealed in public.
And from a media law perspective, as an attorney, are there issues that you see have arisen that are potentially actionable?
Well, I mean, absolutely. There are mistakes that are made probably every day out there, and in many situations, the reality is that, as you and I know as lawyers, it's simply a matter of the economics of someone not wanting to push through litigation and fight
against
the media. And that's the only reason that
unless of course you're Donald Trump and you have all the money in the world to litigate, right?
Exactly. And in his situation, I think, to be honest, you know, that he says he's going to sue the New York Times for these articles. That suit's not going anywhere. I mean, he's a public figure. He has a very high standard to prove liable. That's not going anywhere.
That's right.
Show. On the other hand, there's plenty of things that you'll find in your neighborhood tabloid that probably could be a viable lawsuit, but the reality is that both the economics and the news cycle is most celebrity publicists will tell their clients, don't bother suing because you're just going to make more of it.
That makes sense. That makes a total sense. You heard it from Jens Kepke. He is founding partner of Shaw Kepke and Satter. He knows his media law and ethics. Thanks, Jens, for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Alan. It was a pleasure.
Thanks. And everyone, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week right here on Gervie's Law on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gervie & Wynn.